continue with our adventure in trying to figure out the meaning of life. Our last stage of the introduction, we're going to be learning right now with regard to who is Qoheleth. And we're going to see that, as we do with any sefer, not only putting the book in its proper textual context, but its historical context, which also is going to obviously allude to the authorship, is going to be extremely significant. So in our past shiurim, we were discussing some of the technical issues with regard to canonization, both in terms of appreciating the tripartite division of Tanakh, and also appreciating the particular place that Qoheleth plays in, number one, being part of the Ketuvim, being part of the writings that we said are inspired by Ruach HaKodesh, or as the Rabbanel explained, are really the later Sfarim that were only canonized during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. And we saw even a source for that, if you remember, in Avot Rabbi Natan, when we appreciated that when Shlomo first wrote Sefer Qoheleth, it wasn't immediately popular. It was considered a very ambiguous sefer. And therefore, only during the second Beit HaMikdash, when Anshei Knesset HaGdolah edited and explained it, only then did it become a popular sefer, according to the Rabbanel. We also saw the second context, namely that it's not just one of the Ketuvim, but it's also one of the Chamesh Megillot. And we said that's a very technical terminology by virtue of the fact that the Megillot, there's only one, that a priori was written as a Megillah to be read out loud in a public forum. And that was which one? Excellent. The other ones, so were really only over time. By the time of the Gaonim in the 8th century, in Maseches Sofrim, only then do we see Shir HaShirim is going to be read on Pesach, and Eicha on Tisha B'Av, and Ruth on Shavuot, and we don't even see Qoheleth there. The first time that we find Qoheleth is going to be mentioned in Machzor Vitri, in the compilation of the Halachot of Rashi, incorporated by his Talmidim in literally a liturgical anthology, and there, by the Tfilot of Sukkot, it says that the minhag in the communities of Ashkenaz was to read Qoheleth on Sukkot, something that and has become more or less prevalent today, but I say more or less because even in some communities of Hasidim, especially Chabad, they won't read Qoheleth today because it's going to detract from the Simcha of Sukkot. So that was also my little bit of an introduction to warn you that even though it's Thursday, it's right before Shabbat, these shiurim may tend to depress you a little, but not to worry. And so then we saw there is another context of Qoheleth, and that is that it's one of the writings of Shlomo. And this is what we've really been engaged in. What does it mean that it's one of the writings of Shlomo? Well, we see that Shlomo really has three different stages of his life, as we find in Sefer Melachim. Basically, from Perek Gimel through Perek Chet is going to serve as the rise of Shlomo, the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. That's where we first see, again, Shlomo in Perek Gimel marrying Bat Paro. But the Navi tells us explicitly, even though he married Bat Paro, Vayohav Shlomo et Hashem. And you can look at this in your sources as well, when we see that Shlomo loved God. Then the climax of Shlomo's life, his magnum opus, the building of the Beit HaMikdash, and then basically one can argue that everything was downhill from there, right? So much so that by Perek Aleph, Vishlomo Ahav Nashim Nachriot Rabot, and our heart breaks. Right? Basically, he replaces his love of Hashem with love for these foreign women. And therefore, when we turn then to the sources with which we left last week, and in a Sefer Melachim, the Midrash in source number 9 in Qoheleth Rabbah told us that Shlomo also had three names, Yedidiah, Qoheleth, and Shlomo. And we saw how each one of these three names really depicts a different aspect of Shlomo's life. One can even argue a different aspect of his personality. Yedidiah, what does the name mean? Yedidiah, love of God. That's exactly it. Which seems then to be a beautiful depiction of which sefer of Shlomo's that discusses love of God. Not only that, there are hints to it. For example, we know in Shmuel Bet, Perek Yud Bet, when David wants to build the Beit HaMikdash, and he's told that he won't, but he'll have a son, and he'll build the Beit HaMikdash. And sure enough, after the notorious sin with Bathsheba and killing her husband, Uriah, she has a child dies. Zeva comes to her again. They have another child, Vatikra, Shemo Shlomo. And what does the Navi tell you about him? Vahashem Ahivo. And Hashem loves him. Not only that, immediately thereafter, we hear the next pasuk, Vayishlach Biyad Natan HaNavi, Vayikrat Shmo Yedidya. So because Hashem loves him, what is the messenger of God? What does the Navi say his name is going to be? Yedid Hashem. And literally, the friend, the lover of Hashem. And Yishayahu, in his famous Mashal HaKerem, the Mashal of the Vineyard, Yishayahu explains, Kerem Hayah L'Shlomo, Bebal Hamon, Natan Et HaKerem Lanotrim, Ish Yavi B'Furyo Elef Kesef, Ashira Nali Didi, Shirat Dodi. I want to sing to my friends the song of the beloved. Dodi, where do you find the song of the Dod? Shir HaShirim. And therefore, as we began to discuss last week with regard to which stage of Shlomo's career is Kohelet going to refer to, well, that's going to be a different stage than Yedidya, than Shir HaShirim. As we saw, either Shir HaShirim then was written first as an expression of this romantic, youthful love of Shlomo, as Rabbi Yonatan says, that's Derech Eretz. Most people write love songs when they're young. And then he writes Mishlei as an expression of Shlomo, which is perfect because it's the same letters. And throughout Sefer Mishlei, we find, as many of the Parshanim explain, that in fact the names of the Chachamim, the wise people at the end of Agur, Ben Yeka, and Yitzhiel, they're really all nicknames for Shlomo. So clearly in Sefer Mishlei, he's playing off of his name, which means that Mishlei is more of his doctoral thesis that he writes at the time of the building of the Beit HaMikdash, of psychological, as we said, psychological, chinuch, proper moral behavior, even though Rabbi Yannai says he writes Mishlei first, and then Shir HaShirim is the expression of his love of God manifest through the building of the Beit HaMikdash. But basically, what does everyone agree? Kohelet was written last. And Kohelet is an expression then, if Yedidya is an expression of the earlier stages of Shir HaShirim, Shlomo, Mishlei, then Kohelet is Kohelet. Kohelet, as we started mentioning, is going to be the one to assemble. He's going to be the one to assemble everyone, particularly on a Hakel year. And we saw that this is significant because after Shemitah, when we all come together, what are we thinking, you know, post-corona? The questions that go on in our minds are, wait, now we're starting the cycle all over again? After a year of restful bliss, of, I would say, recalibrating our values, which is really what the Shemitah year is about, then comes Hakel, where we're back to school, back to work, another six-year cycle, and it seems like it's the same old, same old. And you have to ask yourselves, really, what is the point of this all? And therefore, it makes sense not only that Kohelet will be written at the end of his life, but that it would be said also at a Hakel ceremony, as Chazal tell us, people would walk in and walk out throughout the day asking these questions. But that's when I mentioned no one can walk in and walk out, even though we don't have Shir next week. Again, we're going to make sure to have continuity in Kohelet so that we don't leave in the middle of all of our asking of questions. And Kohelet being said or authored at the end of Shlomo's life really does express what we know happens at the end of his life. Not only his love of God being replaced with fiery woman, but really casting doubt on everything that he did. After all, everything that he did accomplish is going to be stripped away from him. So Rashi, if you remember, says, no, don't worry, he says Shir HaShirim at the end. Because Rashi speaks about the love, the endless love of Hashem for Am Yisrael and the symbiotic love in return. Well, with this now, we're basically ready to begin Kohelet. And we saw that the one last issue is going to be, why is Kohelet included? After all, his words, if you remember from 4:15 in the Gemara Masechet Shabbat, his words contradict words of the Torah. His words contradict the words of his own father in Sefer Tehillim. Wait a second, the most significant problem, his words contradict self. All these oxymorons. Simcha's good, simcha's bad, chachma, you know what? You really should pursue chachma. No, it's a waste of time. Make up your mind. And therefore, Chazal explained to us, don't worry, it's okay. Because the beginning is Divrei Torah, the end is Divrei Torah, and even if in the middle you have a lot of questions of heresy, basically apikorsut, is it okay? We said yes. And this is causal justification of the process of asking questions, which we saw is so fundamental to every stage of one's life, but certainly as one is going to, as we'll see, go through life, which helps us understand now who Qohelet is, helping us appreciate another context of Qohelet, and that is that it's one of the Sifrei Chochmah. As we said, it's one of the wisdom literature, not necessarily the wisdom literature of Eel, which is more cosmic philosophy. How does God run the world? And it's not the wisdom literature of Mishlei, which is more psychological behavior. Rather, it's the wisdom of existentialism. What is the purpose of our existence? And we're not initially going to espouse the philosophy of the 19th century existentialists, who were in fact nihilists, and basically said there is no point. We're going to see how Qohelet may begin that way, but he's going to develop it further. So while we already began with who is Qohelet, why does he name himself Qohelet? Source number 16, Rashi says, Al shekihel chokmot herbe. Keep in mind that Shlomo grew up as a prince in the palace. And whenever I see this Rashi, I think of the king and I. Right? Why? Because Shlomo is brought up as, you know, one of the princes of, not of Siam, but of Eretz Yisrael. And he was exposed to the greatest of philosophers, right? Yes, again, Platonic philosophy, and you can imagine Buddhist philosophy, meaning he knew it all. And really, what is he teaching us in Sefer Qohelet? Kihel chachamot harbe. According to Rashi, this is an anthology. Don't let the contradictions bother you. Why not? Because they're all really in different people's philosophies. And therefore, of course, they're going to contradict. Without quoting who says whom, he basically is going to tell you there's this idea and there's that idea and this idea and that idea. And Rashi continues to say, just like at the end of Mishlei, you're going to find all different pseudonyms of Shlomo. For example, Agur ben Yeke. What does the name Agur mean? Even in modern Hebrew, le'egor. To harvest, right? To collect, to hoard. So too, he's a collector. He collects all different chokhmot, all different philosophies, and he's going to present it in a very systematic way. And then he quotes at the end, Yeshomrim shekol dvarav nemru b'hakel. He said his words at the hakel ceremony. Now what Rashi is telling us is, don't worry, this is a very from sefer. You don't have to worry that these are Shlomo's own apikorsic views. No. Again, he really is just sharing with you other views that Chazal weren't even sure of whether or not they really should be shared. But as we said, it's okay. The beginning is the Divrei Torah, as we discussed last week. And that he should engage in under the sun. Under the sun, that already connotes that there is a world above the sun. And even though we don't find any mention of Olam Haba at all in Tanakh, because this world is about Olam Hazeh, nonetheless, he's alluding to Olam Haba. So Rashi already says, you see, Shlomo himself is from, he's just sharing this with you. Now, based on Rashi, what Rashi is saying is that Shlomo is going to literally just collect and share different collections of thoughts, and they're going to contradict one another on all different subjects. And therefore, those who espouse this methodology of Rashi generally have to go searching through Qohelet to systematically organize all the different philosophies, because he's going to go from one to another one, and he's going to continuously speak about primarily three different ventures of philosophical thought that we're going to introduce today. However, we now take a look at Mitzvah Zion, who on one hand says something similar to Rashi, Qohelet to Inyan Kibbutz Va'asifa, Kmo Kilat Yaakov. Qohelet is in fact assembling Hayah Nikrachin Al Shehikil Hadeot HaMenugadot. And he brought together, he literally assembled contradictory thoughts, Letzareif Ulilabeim. Don't worry, says Mitzvah Zion, what was Qohelet's goal? Not to just share with you, you know, all different worldviews. Rather, he's bringing them in order to question them. Basically, he's not just giving you a survey of Jewish philosophy, as Rashi says. He's teaching you philosophy bi'iyun. In other words, he's saying, let's take these philosophies and really try to figure out what the best philosophy, the most truthful philosophy is. Let's try to extrapolate from all these ideas, as we together present rebuttals against each one of them. And therefore, according to Mr. Datzion, this is basically Shlomo sharing an ongoing discussion, almost as if he has a classroom in front of him. He's sharing these different ideas of different philosophers in order to reach some conclusive purpose of life. And then the Rashbam, who says, Kehel Chokmot B'nei Kedem V'Nitchaki Mikol Adam, tells us that, don't worry, Shlomo's philosophy is here also. He may bring you other philosophers, but he's the smartest of them all, which is why we're going to apply the methodology of Ibn Ezra, who says, Kol Halatu Shlomo, Ki Lo Haya Mibnei David Mashiach Hashem Melech, Rakhu Levado, V'Nikrachein Al Lashon, Ha'Chokma Shenikhala Bo. It's called Kohelet because these are all the ideas, the wisdom that was assembled where? In Shlomo, in Shlomo's mind, in Shlomo's head. In other words, what is Kohelet sharing with you? Not other people's views, but his own views, which means that all these Apikorsic views, they're actually his own. And the reason they contradict each other is because he's sharing not only in a cathartic means, but really his development of thought. He's sharing with you his different experiences through life. And therefore, what he believes at one stage, he's going to really present a rebuttal for at another stage. How many of us believe today what we believed 15 years ago, what we believed 30 years ago? And this is really a phenomenal idea where he's telling us that at every stage in life, you rethink these ideas. And at what stage did he finally receive some clarity? At the end of his life, after he tried out different views. And according to Kohelet, he literally tried out these views, which actually dovetail very nicely with different apocryphal literature that we have of Shlomo, that in the middle of his career, a demon, right, the king of demons, of Ashmanat, takes over his throne. Did you ever hear these? Again, these stories of Shlomo takes over his throne and basically impersonates Shlomo while Shlomo is cast to the middle of the wilderness and experiences all different types of adventures. And he's wearing a ring. And what does it say on the ring? Gam ze ya'avor. Don't worry, Shlomo. One day this will pass. And it's built off of, interestingly, the nivuot of, or the chalomot, the visions of Daniel, where Daniel talks about how Nebuchadnezzar, who became very arrogant, is going to end up living 7 years like an animal, like a monster, right, out of punishment. And then only when he humbles himself will he be able to return to the throne. So the same with Shlomo. He then returns to the throne, but he keeps the ring that says, Damzeyavor. This could always pass. And as such, even though it offers us confidence during troubled times, it reminds us of our place at all times. So it really can be that Shlomo tried this all out. Now, this is very iconoclastic for those who say, what do you mean Shlomo is only at the end of his life that Avodah Zarah is attributed to him? But he's going to share how he really had all these different thoughts. And therefore, the reason why I prefer this methodology is because I think it speaks to each and every one of us. Chazal telling us this is very normal to go through times of questioning. It's actually part of life. And you can't go through life without questioning the meaning of life and wondering, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. I love when Bali Tshuva comes to me at the end of class and say, you know, we're learning this hypothetically, but I have lived this, right? I really have tried all different excursions, all different philosophies in life. And the truth is that we're all Bali Tshuva in that sense. And Shlomo tells us, well, there's no way that you're ever going to understand what the point is without first at least reading, without first exploring in the mind what he tells us he actually explored in life, his own experiences that helps him recognize. Sof davar hakol nishma et elokim yira v'et mitzvot havshamor ki zeh kol ha'adam. That in the end, the purpose of life is really to serve God. Now, don't leave just because you know the conclusion, because as we saw, the body is going to be the questioning, the experiments, and that's why when you look at the structure that you see on the last page, the point is to appreciate how he begins his thesis, and then he's going to share with us his experiments, which are then going to really be presented as debates, right? Each philosophy, almost as if it's a different voice in his mind, right? And we're supposed to picture it. You know, I remember when I was young, there was a book that actually became a television sitcom called Herman's Head, right, about all different sides of Herman, his intellectual side, his libido, right? And anytime he had to make a decision, it was portrayed as if different characters were in his head speaking to him. You know, and I saw how it was portrayed on television as if the libido side was a woman in a red dress, you know, that, come on, Herman, this is what you should do. And the intellectual professor, you know, with the bow tie. And to a certain degree, Shlomo's going to be sharing these voices in his head with us that are really these internal debates or dialectics that we're going to see throughout Kohelet. So now you can put the introductory Makoros aside. And from now on, we're going to be learning Kohelet inside. So for those who don't have a Tanakh, not to worry, because I'm also always going to, you'll see, beautiful. So also post and to give you the JPS, the new Jewish Publication Society translation that you'll have in front of you to help you with some of the more esoteric words that we're going to see in Kohelet as we begin now. Perek Aleph Pasuk Aleph, Divrei Kohelet Ben David, Melech Yerushalayim. These are the words of Kohelet, the son of David, who was king in Yerushalayim. Do we know definitively from here who's the author? Not yet, because Melech Yerushalayim could be describing David, who had numerous wives and numerous sons. Some are mentioned in Sefer Shmuel, some in Divrei Hayamim. So I don't know for sure who Kohelet is until Pasuk Yudbet. And we're going to see why he reintroduces himself. Ani Kohelet, in the first person. Ani Kohelet. Hayiti Melech al Yisrael b'Yerushalayim. I myself, Kohelet, was king over Yisrael in Yerushalayim. And that's what Ibn Ezra referred to. The only son of David, who himself was also king of Yisrael, was none other than Shlomo. And that's how we know that this is Shlomo. And that's why we asked, why does he use a pseudonym? Why not just tell us, hi, I'm Shlomo. You're all going to figure it out anyway. And we said, either perhaps to almost, you know, write incognito, right? Basically to say, this isn't the real me, right? This isn't Shlomo. I'm going to be an apikoros for the next 12 chapters. Again, so it's really Kohelet. I want you to see this as Kohelet. That's a little difficult considering that we can figure out that it's Shlomo. And therefore, as we've been discussing, it seems that he's telling us his functional name here. And this isn't the Mishlei of Shlomo. It's not the Shir HaShirim of Shlomo. This is Kohelet. I'm collecting different thoughts that aren't necessarily consistent or consonant with many of the ideas that you've heard me say before. So it immediately catches us off guard, but we appreciate the pseudonym as a way of identifying Shlomo in a different perspective. And now he begins. Hevel habalim, Amar Kohelet. Hevel habalim hakol havel. This is a phenomenon in literature known as Lashon nofel alashon. Right, obviously hyperbole, right? He's basically saying the same thing over and over again. Basically, everything is havel. What does havel mean? Havel is vapor, right? It's here for a moment, and then it's all but ephemeral. It disappears, right? Do you remember Cain's brother? His name is Havel, because he wasn't called anything. Chava calls Cain. And then it doesn't even say that she gave birth to another son. She gave birth to Cain's brother, and he became Havel, which he really did, right? We don't even know how long he lived. He was here and then brought a carbon and was killed by his brother. But not only that, he wasn't really given any significance. You know, it reminds me in Freakonomics, the story is told of a Hispanic couple that named their older son Winner and their younger son Loser, right? Don't do this to your children, right? That's Cain and Havel. Havel is nothing. Interestingly, Winner ended up behind bars and Loser ended up as CEO of a company. That's a longer psychological story, but you can imagine, right, that Hevel, because it really is just a kik yoni, that's the modern Hebrew word, based on the kik hayon of Sefer Yonah, who is it was there, and then it was gone. Right, that's it. He's so bothered. Hevel avalim amar kohelet, hevel avalim hakol hadas. Everything is, even though in some translations you'll see the word vain, but it's more than vain. It's not vain, it's truly, it's less than empty. It's not even really there, because it's not lasting. It really is ephemeral. He basically is saying everything is evanescent, right? It's here and then it's gone. Hevel havalim, and therefore, this leads us directly to his question and frustration. If everything is ephemeral, if nothing lasts, then what's the point of it all? Ma yitron la'adam b'chol amalo she'ya'amol tachat ha'shemesh. What is the yitaron? From the etymology of yeter, right? Yoter. What is the gain? What do I get out of my amelut? What is amelut, literally? Hard work, my toil. But he's going to be using the word amel to basically describe life, which makes sense because life is hard work. And even though it may not be as hard as it was, you know, 100 years ago, you know, I see how my children roll their eyes when, you know, my father or father-in-law tell stories about how they have to walk, you know, and trudge, you know, 10 miles in the snow, you know, with boots with holes in them and whatever the case may be. And it may not be as difficult as it was then, but still, is life hard? Why is life hard? Oh, everyone's just laughing. Everyone on Zoom, you should just know they're laughing. But they're not saying why life is hard. Why is life hard? Excellent, right? Every single day life is hard, right? I'm thinking, again, okay, Baruch Hashem, getting up for some harder, easier than others. And then what do I have to do? Right, an old man who is certainly, the older he gets, the harder it gets. But even when he looks back, he realizes it was hard, right? People had to go work in the fields. Even today, when we don't work in the fields, when it may not be physically hard, it still is an emotional burden, right? Just living and surviving, right? Challenges, not even, again, we can put health challenges, financial challenges, child-rearing challenges, shalom bayit challenges, right? Meaning life is just challenge. Beautiful. That's exactly it. And therefore, he says, what's the point of it? Right? Why do this? What do you gain from all this? From this hard work and toil, she'yamol tachat ha'shemesh, that we should work under the sun. Now, once again, when he means under the sun, he doesn't mean under the sun in this world as opposed to olam haba. As we said, Kohelet is going to dismiss olam haba initially. It basically is going to say, no. This is the world that we see. I don't know of any other world. I want to know what the point of this world is. And that's what's bothering him, right? In this physical world, where we all are, what is the point? Now we're gonna see philosophically, he believes that if there is a point, then we should be able to figure it out, right? That God created this world in a way where we can figure it out. Now, what's interesting about Kohelet is that you're never gonna see Yud Kei Vav Kei. You're never gonna see Shem Hashem, because he's not just asking questions about God and God's existence. He wants to know, even if you didn't necessarily understand a personal relationship with God. Everyone, as you know, until the Industrial Revolution, everyone believed in a God, right? Or multiple gods, in powers, right? Powers that created. What happened, by the way, in the Industrial Revolution that led to agnosticism and atheism? All of a sudden, people felt that they could control nature. But when you're vulnerable to the forces of nature, you realize that there are forces that are out there. So everyone believes in that, and therefore Kohelet, throughout the Sefer, is going to refer to God as Elohim, the God of nature, a powerful God of nature, because his question is not, what is the point of the Jewish people? What's the point of this nation? His question is, what is the role of humanity, right, of man in this world? And that's a universal one. And he's not expecting you to say, well, this is my tafkid, and this is my goal in life, and no. There must be some overarching, excellent, universal goal, yitaron, that we're meant to accomplish in this world. And he believes that if there is, then it must be one that is evident to us. Because if we can't figure it out, then there's no point, right? So if there is a point, then it must be that it's somehow something that can be divulged, that can be researched, that can be understood, which leads us now to the next pasuk. He, like Plato, is going to basically sit under a tree. I'm making up that part. And he's going to look then at the world of nature in which we all exist, trying to figure out from the phenomena of nature what the function of man in this world is. So we're about to see the four different, what we can even call, elements of nature, right? Until the advent of the microscope, it was very clear from everyone, you know, Kohelet to Shakespeare, the Maharal, that how many elements are there? Earth, fire, wind, and water. And that's exactly how he's going to depict his observations. Basically, these are examples that represent the world at large. Let's start then, Pasuk Gimel. Dor holech v'dor ba, va'aretz la'olam omadet. What's a door? Generation of people, right? He's talking about man. Man comes, man goes, and the world just keeps on going. This in itself is so depressing, right? That you look and people live and people die, and people live and people die. Now you're all trying to think, okay, yes, but we get nachas from our grandchildren. I'm about to really depress you. I'm so sorry. Because your grandchildren are going to become grandparents, and then, same thing. They're going to die too, right? And he basically sees what's happening. What's been going on? And not so you wonder, you know, when you learn history, you learn, okay, so the 13th century, the 14th century, the 15th, 16th centuries. Okay, we're just going to keep on going. Everyone see why he's frustrated? There's no point. It just keeps going around and around and around in a circle, right? The shigra, the routine of it all, the cyclical nature. There's no momentum over here. There's no goal. There's no finish line because it all just keeps going. Next pasuk. Vizarach HaShemesh, and the sun rises. Uva HaShemesh, and the sun sets. The El Mekomo Sho'es, Zorea Husha. Says, how about the sun? The sun rises and the sun sets. And it looks like there's movement, but really, El Mekomo Sho'es. When it rises in the east and it looks like it's aspiring to get to the other side of the horizon, and isn't that encouraging? It's like the Medrash about Avraham Avinu, who really thought maybe the sun is God until it sets, right? El Mekomo Sho'es. But he is even more frustrated. It looks like it's getting somewhere. Oh my gosh, it got to the end of the horizon. That's so wonderful. It got to the west. But then what happens? Boom, it's back where it started from. It's like one of those, you know, the water toys that they keep in doctor's offices that are so frustrating, right? That, you know, the bubbles that come out, and just when you think that, oh, the bubble, then like it starts all over again. You know what I mean? Or the sand art. You know, you turn it over, but then, okay, it's time to turn it back. It doesn't go anywhere. Sand didn't move, really. It went from one side of the frame to the other side of the frame. And he's very frustrated. And notice that in both psukim, he uses the terminology of ba, right? Dor holech, dor ba. Zarach HaShemesh, ba HaShemesh. It looks like there's movement. It goes somewhere, but actually, no, it didn't move. It's as static as could be. Pasuka vav. Holech al darom. The Soved of Tzafon, Soved, Holech Haruach, the Al-Sivivotav, Shav Haruach. What does he look at next? Wind. Now, wind looks like it's in motion. It actually feels like it's in motion. There's kinetic energy there. He's so excited. Soved, Holech Haruach. Again, the word of Halicha, there's movement, there's momentum. Well, what does he realize? The Al-Sivivotav. That really, what is the ruach doing? The wind is just going around, maybe not in a circle, but in its pattern. Do you ever wonder, you know, the meteorologists, the weather men and women on television? So we have a southeastern wind coming in, you know, from the Mediterranean. That's exactly it. Again, how did they know this? How do they know that the southeastern wind is coming up north? Because are patterns of the wind, right? Do you remember the movie, one second, I was going to call it Twister, about like anticipating tornadoes, right? How can you do that? Because there are patterns of the wind, right? When they say, okay, whatever it is, Hurricane Katrina is coming our way. How do they know that? Maybe it's going to go up north. No, there are patterns. And that's what's frustrating him. Even Vishav, this time, it's not just but, I'm not just coming, what am I doing? There's more movement, but ultimately, just turning. That's right. Also, we will have shaparuach. And lastly, pasuk zayin, kol hanechalim holchim el hayam, vayam enenu malei. Al makom shanechalim holchim, sham hem shavim alach. Kol hanechalim. What is he referring to here? The water. Think of the cycle of water. I still remember from third grade, I really do, because I remember being frustrated when I had a wonderful English teacher, Mrs. Press, she actually lives here now, and she drew a photosynthesis on the board, right, with basically a cloud, and then the water, the rain, right, condensation, and then it hit the flower, and then an arrow showing that now evaporation, and it goes back to the cloud and condensation. And I remember this picture on the board thinking, that's boring, right? Meaning, and even when I did learn about NADP and NATP, and again, fascinating how chloroform is broken down, and that's really fascinating. But basically, what goes on? The same pattern, the same breakdown of energy. And that's exactly what's frustrating him. Do you ever notice this? It looks like there's movement. The streams are all going to the ocean, but what happens? It doesn't go anywhere. Basically, if they're all going to the ocean, eventually the ocean should fill up, and he doesn't just mean the Kinneret, right? Meaning the oceans, the sea should like fill up the world, right? But that's not what happens. Vayam enenu male. Isn't that strange? Amakom shanachalim hokim, so they all go. Sham him shabim malachet. So they'll evaporate and then condense and keeps going around and around. So again, even those observations that look here, you find the words again. Ava lalachet lalachet. You think there's movement, but there really isn't. So not only is he using these four different examples to depict the four basic elements, maybe even the four states of matter of solid, liquid, energy, gas. And what does he want to say? Universally, nothing really changes. Nothing really moves. Right? Even think about it. I think of an ice cube. Right? Ah, wow, it's a bella. No, because what happens? Keep it out in the sun for 10 minutes and it's liquid again. And then another 10 minutes and it's gas. And then all of a sudden it gets cold and droplets once again. And a little while longer, it's frozen. Right? Oh, so frustrating. Basically, he's using these four examples to show us the cyclical nature of the world, which does not allow any goal to be fulfilled. So this is going to be a basic philosophical premise, namely, that if there isn't something that you can actually achieve at the end, then you can't call that a goal, right? There's no finish line, right? You just keep going, keep going. You're going to notice that I'm going to quote a lot of movies and books, again, as we learn together, because this is an age-old question, right? It's not just Kohelet. I recommended reading Tuesdays with Maury, right? These are basic questions. How many of you saw Groundhog Day with Tom Hanks, right? Meaning, that's exactly it. He's going crazy when it's the same day over and over and over again. What's the point? What's the point? So let's take a look. He then says, you may think that, okay, maybe in nature, everything in nature is cyclical, but man can do things. We can achieve a goal. And the next pasuk he's going to say, choose whatever you think man can do, and let's see if man can really accomplish it. For example, kol hadvarim yigeyim. Whatever it is that we do, say, what does the word yageya mean? Yageya, yud gimel ayin, is? Okay, wearisome. That's exactly it. Wearisome, tiresome. In other words, kol hadvarim yigeyim. Everything exhausts itself, right? That's really, I think, the best translation. Everything is exhausted. And in the sense of, you can't really ever fully accomplish something. Here's a great example. Lo yuchal ish ledaber. Let's say, I say the point of man is to speak. Okay, that can't be the point unless you can speak everything there is to speak, right? To reach that goal, that finish line. What's the problem? You can never speak everything that there is to speak because there are so many languages. There are, even if I take, even if I start reading the Gemara, the Sensino, right? From start to finish, and then read the Yerushalmi, and then read all the dictionaries in the world. Basically, this is what I do with my life. Have I said everything that there is to say? Certainly not. Similarly, lo tispa ayin lerot. What if I say the point of man in this world is to see everything there is to see? How many of you enjoy traveling? As also, my parents also, they have a map in their kitchen with all the different places where they've been in the world, and, you know, they put the pins and... Again, my sister bought this for them too, and everyone has a job, right? My sister puts the pins in. I make a collage of all the trips that they've gone, of all the places that they've gone to. My mother puts the album together. Again, all beautiful, beautiful. They've gone to many, many countries. Have they seen everything there is to see? No. And even if they've seen Alaska in the summer of, I can't even say, you know, about 2021, because no one, oh, maybe some people were traveling. Let's say they saw Alaska in the summer of 2021. They didn't see Alaska in the winter of 2021 because they were in Switzerland in the winter of 2021, right? Everyone see this? I can't see everything there is to see. I remember when my parents went to safari in South Africa, and my children really wanted to go with them, as you can imagine. And they said, no, 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 it's okay, but we're going to send you, right, live, you know, we'll FaceTime the videos. And in the end, I actually found there are like live safari virtual realities that you can go to on the computer and basically see. But can you see everything there is to see? No, right? I tell myself maybe one day I'll take a somewhat Shabbaton and I'll actually like watch TED Talks. And I tell myself, that's so silly. Why? Because I can't see everything anyway, right? So I may as well just learn, right? Meaning, and you can't see everything there is to see. And lastly, he says, even something more passive, right? You can't even lotimale ozen mishmoa. Even if I just sit here and say the point is to hear everything there is to hear, I can't do that either. Ma shehaya hu sheyeh. And I hate to tell you this, but even as you look at the progression of the world, you haven't really gotten so far, right? And what he wants to say is, even if you want to say, okay, it's humanity, what do you mean? We've developed so much more. We become democratic, tolerant people. Waiting for smirks and laughs. That's right. Yeah, I remember when ISIS came in. Like, what century are we living in, right? Where people still like massacre people. You know, wasn't that the Crusades? And again, that's exactly what his point is. Mashaya, hushiye. Whatever was is also what will be. I'm not necessarily an Asimov science fiction fan, but I do have these, time travel dreams where I imagine myself traveling to different time periods. Generally, my dreams take me to, anyone want to guess what time period? I don't know. Again, past. Oh, yes? Okay, so indeed. To the time of the Beit HaMikdash. So either Shlomo's Mikdash, but generally, I think because we can picture the Herodian Mikdash for the last 70 years, so I see myself like living in the first century. I have, by the way, right, really dreams of bringing Bikurim. I can tell you what I'm wearing in these dreams. And I have dreams also of like living through the Horban, right? Those are scary dreams. I also have, I don't know why I'm sharing this. This is just a cathartic moment. I have like Holocaust nightmares, even though none of my immediate family was in the Holocaust, but maybe reading so much literature. Okay, that's probably for like a psychological discussion. But in any case, back to my Mikdash dreams. So I imagine like waking up as a girl during the time period of the Beit HaMikdash, realizing, oh my gosh, I'm not in 2021 anymore. I'm in the year 4 CE. And all of a sudden, my clothing is a little different. And I ask myself, okay, how long would it take for me to get used to this ancient lifestyle? Right? For example, what would I have to get used to? Okay, meaning they probably did wear, right, underneath, underneath their dresses, their tunics, for sure. And what else then? Mikvah. No car. That's right. Oh my gosh. Right, meaning it's time to get food. What do I have to do? I have to walk. By the way, I thought you said mikvah, and I was thinking, I would actually like mikvah, I think, except in the winter, right, but like, wow, under the stars. It's like going in camp. But okay, never mind. But not everyone would like that. But in any case, back to no car, right? That's exactly it. Time to get water. Even water, right? No faucet to turn on. What do I have to do? I know exactly where I live in the old city, by the way. And like, I'm in a family of kahuna. I'm not a kohen. But I told you, this is a dream. So then I have to go to the shiloah. Oh my gosh, what a schlep to get water. And how about my groceries? There's no makolet, but there is like a peddler, you know, who comes in, and we have to ask, you know, okay, kedushat shviyat and all that, and much more than them. How long does it take for me to do a load of laundry? Too long, thank you. And I don't change clothes that often, which also means that I have to get used to the various smells. Again, that's going to be part of it. And how about cooking a meal? Oh my gosh, there is no microwave or even convention oven. It's all fire. how long would it take to make a Shabbos meal? Oh my, or even like a nice lamb chop, right? This is hours, right? And I'm making pizza all day and, okay, anything else? Okay, no air conditioning, no heat. So that's exactly it, certain things to get used to. Okay, how long do you think it would take for us to get used to this? You'll see why I'm asking. I keep thinking about 2 weeks or so. And I'm like, okay, right, by the way, there are some good things about this. Everything is organic. And they're very helpful. And one thing I think that would be very scary is getting sick and not having antibiotics. And that's why mortality rates really were, I know we're very high, but back to this, bottom line though, would life really be so different? It's really not. Like I even think about my life, I would go, I would cook, I would give Torah shiurim, of course, right? And I would wash dishes, I would clean up after my children, change diapers, right? Everyone do this? Life really wouldn't be so different. If I would ask you to describe a day in your life, it really would be very similar to the way that someone back then. Now, obviously the pace would be drastically different, right? Not the same transportation, take much longer to get but basic life. And, you know, I'm sure people were gossiping about the same things, right? And, you know, this wedding and this heartbreak and, you know, this, whatever it may be, you know, this divorce and this one gave birth and, you know, wars and loves and, right? Everyone see this? And that's the point. Mashaya hu sheyye. So now let's fast forward, right? So now, again, those were, you know, the backwards one, but it's okay because when it came to the future, so that television took care of. And this is so nice to be able to teach everyone here because when I teach 18-year-old students, they don't all appreciate my references. Anyone remember the Jetsons? Excellent. Thank you so much. Right. And that was so exciting, right, to have like these literally these apartments, you know, in, I can't really say outer space, but you know, a beautiful sky view apartment. And how does everyone get from one house to the other? Monorails. That's exactly it. And you could, do you remember, you could call up the supermarket and the food could be delivered on a conveyor belt to your house. And there was, you know, the robot house cleaner and Astro the dog. And yeah. Now, if you think about this, our lives are the same, if anything, even more sophisticated than the Jetsons today, right? Meaning, I don't even have to call the supermarket to order food. What do? I actually have my shopping list saved on Supersala online. All I have to do is click a button. And by the time I come home today, the food is going to be laid out on my kitchen table, better than a conveyor belt, right? How do you like that, right? And I don't need, you know, I have those, one of those iRobot vacuum cleaners. Again, I turn it on, they break all the time, but whatever. But you turn them on, and I come home, the floor is clean. Not really, but it's okay. Again, and again, think about, it reminds me also, my parents took us when I was 8 years old to Epcot Center in Miami, and there was the House of the Future. That was one of the exhibits. And you would walk in, and there were glass windows all over the ceiling. Firstly, the energy was all solar. We're like so way past that. And again, that the solar energy, and based on the light as well, the glass would either tint, meaning automatic tinting, and then you would walk in and you would clap your hands and you can turn the lights on, go like that, and then the television goes on. And it was really fascinating, right? And they showed you the hydroponic plants and the house of the future. So, okay, let's say this was about, you know, 40 years ago, four summers ago, we took our children to Epcot Center. There's no longer any house of the future. Why? We're in the house of the future. And by the way, we are so much more advanced than what they even projected. We don't have to go like that. What do? When we're in the airport, we turn our lights off in our house. Right? Do you all have that app? Anna, you can turn your lights off. And they also showed you something really fascinating, that you can have a big screen on your wall and you call, you know, the telephone and you could speak to someone on the screen and he would talk and then there would be like a 5-second delay and then you would talk. Why is that funny? welcome to FaceTime. And, you know, Zoom is obviously something beyond their dreams. Now, why do I mention this? Oh, no, I'm sorry. So I'm going to end with this, if that's okay. Again, with this pasuk, again, it's similar to the whole idea of iPhones. Right now, there's an iPhone. I don't know. What number are we up to? 13. You know, they have that technology for iPhone 20 already. I'm meaning everything. That's his point. Ma shahaya hu sheyihye. Whatever was really will be. Life isn't going to change that much. And even if you can project what will change, which means that it's not different. Right? I can imagine what it will be. Umasha na'ase, whatever was done, hu sheyase. Ve'ein kol chadash tachat ha-shemesh. There is nothing new. Right? It's not as if we're really spiraling upwards at all. Everything is really the same old, and therefore, ma yitron la'adam v'cholam alo sheyamol tachat ha-shemesh. Have a Shabbat shalom. And we'll try to, and Be'ezrat Hashem, in 2 weeks' time, we'll meet back here to continue our philosophical discussion of Kohala. Thank you. Because he is. So isn't that fascinating? Isn't that amazing? That basically is what he's saying. Beautiful, because at the end, so Rashi says, don't worry, he wrote your Hashirim at the end, right? Meaning he's bothered by what you're bothered by, but ultimately he's going to, in the end, recognize that Etalokim Yira Des Mitzvotav Shemor. In the end, he goes back to Shir Hashirim and to Mishlei.